Blog Talk Radio.
Suspense Radio One-on-One, of course, partnered up with partners in CrimeTours.net. This is our Sunday show that we are able to showcase the authors that are on tour with partners in CrimeTours.net, and we use this as a tour stop for them to be able to show their work. And, you know, they're doing a lot of blog stuff and typing, but now they get to speak, and they speak directly to you so you can hear exactly what they have going on in the writing world. Today, we got two authors for you. We're going to start off with Carrie Baldwin, followed by Michael Byers-Lewis. And again, remember that all the shows here on Suspense Radio are brought to you by Kensington Books. So visit KensingtonBooks.com for more information. And, of course, subscribe to us here on iTunes. You get the podcast and any in all of your listening devices. You can listen to it whenever you want to, treadmill, running, anything like that. You know, go into the store, pop us in. So let's jump into our first guest here. Her book is called Notorious. It is the third book in her series. It follows Fallen and Judgment. So we are very happy to welcome Carrie Baldwin to the show. So, Carrie, thanks so much for coming on. How you doing?
Hi, John. I'm doing really well. Thank you so much for having me today. I really appreciate that. I love being on Suspense Radio. And I have to say, I haven't thought of listening to you on the treadmill, but since I listen to all my books on the treadmill, I think I'll give that a try.
Right, and you know, and the good thing about listening to us on the treadmill is that you probably want to get through your workout real quick, and we can help you do that.
You get my heart rate up, too, I think.
Yeah, you know, we can help you do that. I mean, sometimes you're just so intense on listening to the conversation, you just forget, and you're like, oh, my God, I just did 45 minutes, and I've only done 30. That's wonderful. So we can do that. We are calorie counting. We can cut calories here on the radio. That's what we can do.
Okay, a new use for suspense. So,
yeah.
Well, listen, thanks again for having me. And I'm really excited about my new book, Notorious. This is the third book, as you mentioned, in my Cassidy and Spencer thriller series. This whole series is kind of like a Bones meets Criminal Minds series. It's a series that focuses on profilers and what they do, but it also really focuses on a relationship between the two protagonists, Atticus Spencer, Spence to those who don't want to punch in the face, and Dr. Caitlin Cassidy. He's a brilliant FBI profiler, and she is a brilliant forensic psychiatrist. And they've often been on opposite sides of the fence for the early part of their careers, and then in Judgment, they wind up having to face down a killer together, and that's kind of the beginning of a beautiful relationship that's often fraught with conflict. So I'm really excited about Notorious. Go ahead.
Yes, and now that you're in book three, you know, you kind of have a good almost, you know, 1,000 pages of material that you've now written, and when you kind of look at it in that sense, you're like, wow, you know, that's like a, you know, that's a lot of stuff that has been going on. And of course, in 2014, our magazine listed Judgment as one of the best books of 2014 in category. And now that you've come through Fallen, and now you're kind of coming through Notorious, how do you think maybe the story has progressed? How have things moved along? What kind of surprises maybe have you found out going the way as the author that, you know, you really didn't know these things were going to happen? And now when people read the series, if they haven't read it now, and then they see that you have three books out and they want to kind of get into it, what's the progression that you're going to take them through the three books and into Notorious?
Well, first of all, I want to say how exciting it was to be named a best book of 2014 with Judgment. That was a huge, unexpected thrill. So thanks again for that. Thanks to the readers
for
that.
That's well deserved. You know, well deserved. Well, we just don't hand that out to everybody. That's well deserved.
Well, I am very, very proud of that. As far as the progression of the book, I would emphasize that readers can read each book as a standalone novel. And the reason that you can do that is because each book represents a separate case. And I do solve each case to what I hope is the reader's satisfaction with each book. I don't leave you with a cliffhanger. The next book will begin a new case. So you will get a satisfying answer to an individual case, and you don't have to know anything about a prior case in order to enjoy that book thoroughly. We also try to catch you up to speed on the basics of Katie and Spence and all things Katie and Spence and who they are and, you know, where they come from, as you would in any book that you begin. However, there is a progression of the relationship as the course of the book progresses. And so you will see them progressing in the way they interact with one another and the depth of their relationship. You'll see new conflicts surface and old conflicts resolve. The thing that I was very surprised about in Notorious and that I really like about Notorious is in book one and in book two, we really focused pretty heavily on Katie and some of the issues that she is having to deal with. Her father was executed for a crime he didn't commit, so you can imagine that this is something that has influenced her entire life. And she's dealing heavily with that in book one and also in book two. But in Notorious book three, we find out some things about Spence and Spence's past, and some dark family secrets come out for him that really turn his world upside down. And I think one thing I really enjoyed focusing on Spence, but the other thing that was kind of fun for me is that at the time I turned my manuscript into my editor, when she read what happened to Spence's secret, she was completely shocked. Even though I had actually discussed it with her in the past, she had forgotten that I was going to go in that direction. And so I was so happy that when she read it, she did not see it coming, and it was quite a shock to her and had an impact on my editor. So I thought that was great, and I was really pleased with that. And I hope that readers are going to enjoy getting a deeper look into Spence and some of his past. I can't say too much about it because it is a twist that affects the plot. So, but there is a dark secret that will come out about Spence in book three.
So the other thing, of course, is as you've progressed yourself as a writer and the things that you've done, you know, you've learned different tricks now and different writing tendencies and things that you've kind of progressed as an author. What will fans maybe notice that haven't picked up the book yet, and then they get it and they read it? What are they going to find out new about Carrie Baldwin and the way that she wrote with Judgment and Fallen and now into Notorious? Are they going to have some noticeable differences maybe in your writing style and something that you wanted to change and that you looked and that you wanted to do differently?
My goal as a writer is to become a better writer with each book. So I would love for readers to find that each book is better than the last book. And I hope that that's the case. As far as specific techniques, I don't really have a specific technique that I have developed or done something differently. The only thing that I would say is that there are differences in how dark each story is, and sometimes mm-hmm. that just has to do with the story itself. One of the things that I believe in is that it's all about the story. You follow the story rather than a formula. So I think that might be something that I struggle with because, in a way, readers want to get the same thing from every book. They want to open a Carrie Baldwin book and say, oh, I know exactly what I'm going to get. I hope when they open a Carrie Baldwin book that they're going to know that they're going to get surprises, they're going to get twists, they're going to be intellectually challenged with some kind of a puzzle about a crime, and that they're going to get emotion and depth of character. Those would be my goals for what a reader would get. Mm-hmm. But I do things, I don't write by a formula, and I don't have, each time I write a book, I laugh with my friends, oh, I forgot how to write a book, how did I do this? I feel like I'm starting over each time I start a new story. And in a way, that's bad because maybe it's not quite as uniform as or homogenous as what people might expect. But I feel that that helps me stay true to the story. I do attend a lot of seminars that have to do with the world that my books are set in. I've been to Writers Police Academy, where I spend a lot of time with actual law enforcement officers, everyone from military to police to FBI. I spent a full day in New York at FBI headquarters last year. That was done through Thriller Fest, and that was great, and really had a chance to pick the brains of the special agents.
Yep.
And that was
yep.
a very fun experience. And I do remember when I was sitting in the room at FBI headquarters waiting for the seminar, and they had various agents rotating through and giving us information on different topics. And at one point, I will say, someone came in and I kind of caught my breath because I said, oh my gosh, Spence has just entered the room. So there was an agent that really reminded me of my character, my protagonist in the series. So that was pretty fun and interesting. So I do try to make sure the books are very authentic and do as much as I can to research them so the reader can get a real authentic experience for what some of this crime solving would be like. Although I will say some of it is a bit over the top because I also want to give them the thrill ride.
Right, and you kind of have to. I mean, sometimes, police work is kind of boring. I mean, it's 95% boring. You know, it's not about what you see on the TV. That's just the 5%, I guess, that's the exciting part. But typically, it's a lot of waiting around. It's hoping that you have a lot of people. I mean, when you watch that show, The 48 Hours, and you kind of see what they go through, it's a lot of waiting around, and it's a lot of, you know, maybe trying to find somebody that might give you one little other piece of information or something to that effect. It's not a lot, so you have to add that thrill in there. You gotta get the things going because people don't want to read a dummy's book on exactly what it's like to, you know, go through a police investigation. That would not be the best thing ever.
Exactly, although there are many, many fans of police procedure, but you're right, it's very difficult to get that procedure in there in a way that will not bore the reader. And one of
right.
the things I find really challenging is that investigations have so many interviews, and it is a challenge to have to tell a story without one interview following another interview following another interview following another interview. So somewhere along the way, a car has got to blow up, or you've got to have a car
exactly.
chase, or, you know, it has to, it
exactly.
has to be quite a bit more exciting than that to hold the reader's attention. One thing I will say that is consistent about me as well, and that I've come to learn, and maybe you're going to be seeing more of it in the future, is that I have action in my book, and I like action, but the kind of action I like is psychological action. I consider that I write psychological thrillers. So for me, it's not so interesting that the car blew up as why someone blew up the car and how someone reacts to the fact that the car is blowing up. When somebody is in a life or death situation, I would rather read about, as a reader, I would rather read about them using their wits to get out of the situation than their physical strength. So one thing you will find more of in my books, and hopefully more in the future, is psychological action as opposed to just simply physical action. I do think my books are getting, I can't say this so much for the last book, for Notorious, I think it's about the same level of darkness as Judgment, mm-hmm. but the book that I am working on now, which I am ashamed to tell you is untitled. I have an idea for the title, but we haven't cemented the title yet. This book is going to be very dark. So I do think maybe my writing is going to get darker and darker as I go along.
And I got to kind of follow up. Why is that? I mean, is that just the way the books are headed, or is that just your kind of comfort zone of where you find yourself as an author writing now?
I think it's what I find interesting. The deeper that I can go into the heads of both the victims and the villains, the more interesting the book is and the more interesting the story is to me, because then it's not merely a series of exciting and surprising events, but it happens to people that I know and that I care about. So I suppose that could happen on the lighter side as well. And I do try to balance that a little bit with Katie and Spence, because of course they are headed, I will reveal that they are headed for a happy ending eventually, but I won't tell you when that's going to happen, but they are headed for their happy ending. So they are on a path in their life where their lives, despite their obstacles that they have to overcome, are getting better and better. They're resolving their issues as human beings. So in that way, the books are uplifting. But I think the dark stories are more interesting to me for whatever reason, and I don't know what that says about me, but they are.
Gotcha. Now, there's a character I would like to talk about in this, and that's Dutch.
Yes.
I want to kind of understand, give us a little bit more about who Dutch is in this book and why he's so important.
I'm hesitating just a moment only because there is a surprise in the book that involves Dutch and who he is.
Well,
but
who is he as
general,
a person? I mean, give us the background, maybe,
right.
Who is he as a person and your thinking behind bringing a character like that in. Let's start like that.
Dutch could almost steal the show in Notorious for me. I really like him as a character because he is not as immediately likable as some of the other characters in the book. He's standoffish. He's not very social. He's had a tough life as a kid. His father, he was raised by a single mom, and his father was around, but, you know, not on a regular basis at all. And he grew up with secrets in his life. He was very ashamed of the fact that he was illegitimate, very tough, just grew up tough. And when he comes into the FBI, in a way he's like Spence because he will do almost anything to keep a bad guy off the street, and even more so than Spence. And he has some things that have happened in his career in the past. There was an incident where he was questioning a suspected terrorist, and during the course of that questioning, the terrorist attacked him, lunged at him with a knife, and he shot and killed the terrorist. And there are many people who really don't know if Dutch acted in self-defense or if he acted on his own to eliminate this someone that he thought was a threat to other people and to national security. So he has kind of a dark cloud hanging over him in the FBI. He's crusty. He's sharp with people. But inside, he has a huge heart, and he had a very complicated relationship with his wife who has been murdered. And that is one thing that makes the story interesting, is that he didn't have a good relationship with her, and now she's gone. And as we go through the book, we peel back layer after layer about his relationship with his wife. And that relationship later turns around and impacts Katie and Spence's relationship. You know, as they watch what had happened in that marriage, it actually has an impact on them and their relationship. And, of course, it has an impact on the plot of the book. But he's kind of a crusty character that may not be likable initially, but I think in the end, readers will empathize with him and really want to root for him to come out ahead.
Gotcha. The reason I ask, because he was kind of, you know, he's that wild card that you kind of see in there, because, you know, people know Atticus and they know Caitlin, but he was the wild card. He's the thing that can kind of throw the story into turmoil. And I was just kind of curious, you know, was that kind of what you were going for when you decided, hey, you know what, I'm going to put a character like that in there, and then you created him?
Yes, actually, what happened was he showed up in Fallen. in the storyline of Fallen, they needed somebody. I needed somebody in the story that had experience at as a hostage negotiator. And Dutch showed up at the end of Fallen in Hollywood on their case in Hollywood. And then very unexpectedly, he and Spence don't get along. And then unexpectedly at the end of Fallen, when the new case comes up, it's a case involving Dutch's wife. And Spence and Katie go out to help him with that. But he does not only throw the story in turmoil in terms of the plot, but he throws the world of the story in turmoil, because what is going on with him has an impact that is going to reverberate through every level of the story, through the plot, through the characters' lives, and through his own character growth. So, yeah, he definitely is an agent of change, I guess I would call him, not just a special agent, but an agent of change. And I love him so much, I've thought about introducing him into another series, because I think he's a very interesting character and I would like to get to know him even better.
Now, is your focus right now on your writing, is it simply the series? Is it simply, you know, focusing on this? Or do you have other ideas that are kind of outside of the series that you want to explore, you know, with different topics and different characters?
Yes, and it's hard to know because I do work full-time as a physician. I'm a pediatrician. I have a limited amount of projects that I can work on at one time, and I am under contract for two more books in this series. My overall plan right now is to go ahead and finish up the Cassidy and Spencer series, but I have a big, what I call my big standalone that I'm working on as well. And it is very dark. It features an anti-hero. I don't want to go into that too much because it's, you know, definitely in the developmental stages, but I'm working on that. And then I have a smaller project that's in a totally other world that focuses on a female antihero. So again, I think I'm going into the dark antihero type. That's the direction that I'm going. And I do have other places that I want to go. But right now, when I work on a book, I really want to focus on that story. So I do have other projects going on. I have other goals because this series, you know, eventually is going to come to an end. So I have other things that I'm working on. But as I'm working on each story, I want to focus on making that story the very best story that I can and the best book that I've written. So I try to really focus on that project that I'm with at the moment, but I definitely have other irons in the fire.
Yeah, and I think that is how you kind of grow yourself too as an author. I mean, you explore different avenues and you explore different things, and you say that your writing mm-hmm. might be going to a little darker place, but is there still a subject that you won't go to? Is there a place that you just can't go to?
I would say it's not that I can't go to, but I don't want to go to certain types of areas where women or children are on screen treated violently, or it's more of a peek behind that, and that is because I don't want to do anything that someone could gratuitously enjoy. Like, it's not my intention for anyone to have enjoyment in reading about violence. It's really, you know, my intention for them to see how people grapple with it, how they overcome it. It's real. It exists. But I really want to be sure that I never write in such a way that someone who was a violent person would pick up the book and enjoy vicariously reading about someone being, you know, tortured or raped, for example. So that is a place that you won't see me going.
And so we got about a minute left, and I want to be able to kind of give you the last word to be able to kind of let everybody know, you know, where they can find you, where you're going to, you know, where you're at, and maybe anything else that you want to kind of get into that we didn't have a chance to talk to right about now. So do it up.
Sure. Well, I am going to be at Thriller Fest in New York in July. So if you're there, please look me up. I'm happy to talk to readers. I love talking to readers. I'll also be at RWA in July in San Diego. So Thriller Fest will be in New York in July, and San Diego is Romance Writers of America. I really love to hear from readers because I like to know what you enjoy, what you don't enjoy. I like to know how you react to the stories, how you react to the characters, what things drive you forward in a story, and what things make you want to throw that book against the wall. So please, I do want to encourage anyone that wants to contact me through my website, through my Facebook page. I welcome that. Very much. I love to hear from readers.
And your website, of course, is carriebaldwin.com, and you have all the stuff that people can find you out. I guess they can contact you and all of your Facebook, Twitter, and all that other fun stuff you got going on, too.
Absolutely. Through the website. Sign up for my newsletter. I'd love for you to sign up for my newsletter. I'll let you know about all my new releases, everything that's happening in my world.
But I guess the question is,
through my website.
But the other question is, when are you going to update on your website the next holiday recipe?
Well, I guess that's up to the Avon ladies. When the Avons have their next holiday loop, I will get something other than tamales. Maybe readers can give me a request for last time we put Spanish tamales on there, which
yep.
is an Arizona treat, and I am from Arizona, so it was regional. But if readers have a special holiday recipe, I would be more than happy to update it.
Well, Carrie, we want to thank you so much for coming on. It has been a pleasure to speak with you. Wish you nothing but the best. Good luck on the remainder of your tour with Partners in Crime, and we will talk with you later.
John, thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Thank you. Bye-bye. So again, everybody, that is author Carrie Baldwin. The book is called Notorious. It is book three in her series, and you can go to carriebaldwin.com for more information, and, of course, you'll find out about Fallen and Judgment. It's a Cassidy and Spencer thriller series, so if you find that, it's Cassidy and Spencer. Again, carriebaldwin.com is where you need to go. We're going to take a quick break here, and we're going to be back with our next guest, Michael Bears Lewis, and his book, Veil of Deception, Military Political Thriller. And so, in the meantime, check this out.
Thank you.
Welcome back, everybody, here after the break. And again, this is Suspense Radio One-on-One, April the 17th. Normally we have one guest. Today, though, Partners in Crime, we got two authors that we're going to be on here. We just spoke with Carrie Baldwin. And next we got Michael Byers Lewis talking about his latest book, Veil of Deception. Mike has a background in Air Force, so he's military background. So the book is a military political thriller. And we want to welcome him to the show right now. So, Michael, thanks so much for coming on. How you doing?
John, I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me here today. I'm a big fan of the podcast, and I listen to it often.
Well, wonderful. So this is, you know, this is your second thriller novel, and it's called Veil of Deception, a standalone book. So you haven't really gotten into the series thing. So let's go ahead and let's jump into the book and let everybody know what you got going on.
Great. Well, actually, Veil of Deception, it's the sequel to my award-winning thriller novel,
Slowly
Bond.
Oh, it is a sequel. Okay. My fault. I read that wrong.
But it can be read as a standalone novel. You don't have to read the first one to understand what's going on in Veil of Deception, but it certainly helps.
Okay.
But the story is centered around the premise, what if the company that was building America's most expensive weapon system was secretly owned by one of our enemies? Now, I developed the idea late in the 1990s and sat on it, obviously, forever, after the executive administration was caught accepting campaign donations from one of our adversaries. Veil of Deception, it's a big story. Slowly Bond, my first book, was about a student pilot, Jason Conrad, a guy who was struggling to make it through the cutthroat world of Air Force pilot training. But Jason soon finds out that his friends have bigger secrets than his own when he uncovered a plot to assassinate the leading presidential contender in the 1996 presidential election, who happened to be his estranged father. Now, Veil of Deception, that takes place 5 years later, and our hero, Jason Conrad, he kind of finds himself in a rut. He's an instructor pilot in the T-38, that's the U.S. Air Force Advanced Supersonic Jet Trainer, and he's still living in Enid, Oklahoma, stationed at Vance Air Force Base. But after the events in Slowly Bond, he's not interested in any adventure or excitement. He's basically hiding out. He's kind of content. His life has changed quite a bit. The woman of his dreams has disappeared following the events in Slowly Bond. And Jason, he hasn't coped with that very well at all. I mean, professionally, he's doing fine. He's developed into one of the best instructor pilots on the base. One problem he hasn't been able to overcome is his commanders want him reassigned because he attracts way too much attention from the Pentagon. You see, with Jason's father, a former presidential candidate, it's brought around far too many folks from the Beltway, i.e. Washington, D.C., to warrant too much attention for a lowly company-grade officer. So this has never gone over well with the wing commander's advance, and it's affected his ability to secure the jobs he's wanted. Now, personally, Jason's a mess. Because of the failed personal relationships that we see in Slowly Bond, he's lost. He drinks way too much. He chases the wrong women. He has no personal goals right now. He's just kind of drifting through his life. But when he crashes a jet on a training mission, things really start to happen. The commander of the base sees this as an opportunity to get rid of Jason. There's an unscrupulous television reporter who's familiar with Jason's exploits from the first book, and he hounds him relentlessly and insists that Jason should be thrown in jail. Shortly thereafter, Jason's given an assignment that nobody really thinks he's qualified for, to fly at the United States Air Force Flight Test Center at Edwards Air Force Base in California. So this is where Chuck Yeager broke the sound barrier back in 1947. And it was popularized in the movie The Right Steps. So when Jason's assigned to a secret project that's being built by Trincor Industries, his life is pretty much immediately filled with more questions than answers. Now, one of the subplots in the book involves a reporter from the New York Times, Sherry Davis. She's investigating Saudi Arabians who are living in and moving around the United States. So after she confronts one of these individuals, she's attacked. And it's not until later that she really wonders if the attack was an attempt to kill her or was it simply a warning. But eventually Sherry's investigation takes her out to California. And while she's investigating the Saudi connection, she stumbles upon TrimCore Industries. So she has her own reasons for looking into this corporation, and they have nothing to do with secret jet aircraft. So eventually her path crosses with Jason Conrad. And there's quite a bit of tension initially between the two, as they're both kind of reluctant really to trust anybody, especially each other. But together they begin to unravel the mysteries of TrimCore Industries and solve some of the events that are surrounding their activities at Edwards Air Force Base. So, you know, Veil of Deception, I don't think it's your average military thriller. There's no super soldiers. There's nobody that gets shot 20 times and 2 days later they're out running a marathon. There's no technology that only exists in science fiction movies. I mean, it's a very plausible story. You know, if it showed up in the news, you'd say, yeah, I could see that happening.
Now, the question, I have another question, too, and just from thinking, because when you answered how kind of Jason was moving from Sterling Bonds onto Veil of Deception, when you finished the book Sterling Bonds, were you thinking of the beginning of Veil of Deception, or did you kind of have to go back and say, well, I ended it this way, so I got to make sure that I kind of started the right way, and then you started putting the plot and things around it?
It kind of evolved in process. In other words, I knew I had another story that I wanted to tell it, and I just made sure as I set up Veil of Deception that you know, I did it in a way that it related to the end of Sterling Bonds. Now, the interesting thing is, as I was writing Veil of Deception, I actually came up with ideas for at least, you know, three other either novels or novellas, I haven't really decided, that take place between the two, involving, you know, as they created characters in the second book, I thought, wow, well, how could I tie this into the first book? So, you know, that's something that's going to come on a little later, probably in more of a short story type form, but that was kind of an interesting fallout.
And like you said, this is a little bit different military thriller. I mean, there's a lot of military aspects into it, but it's not, you know, you're not running around the world trying to capture terrorists that are trying to blow up the United States or the world for the 100th, you know, 50 time. It's something a little bit different. What was the pull that you wanted? Was it because of like the shadowing of this company and not really having and not really knowing the fear of what it could be if this were to happen? What was that pull for you that decided to kind of explore that plot line further?
Yeah, that's exactly it. There's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of things that are going on out there that that we really don't know about. You know, one of the main reasons why I set the books in the past, and I don't know if you noticed that, but, you know, this book takes place in 2001. The first book takes place in 1995-96. But I like to set the books in the past to kind of help explain the present. You know, a lot of thriller writers write in the present tense or maybe even slightly in the future, and I wanted to kind of do something a little bit different. And I felt by setting my stories in the past, I can kind of use some of those events to help anchor the story, and then bringing in some of those things from the past that all of us are familiar with kind of helps ground the reader. And I try to use the past to explain the present. You know, some of the things that are going on in the world today, those things just don't happen overnight. And I try to show the reader that something he saw in the news today just didn't suddenly happen today. The seeds of that event, whatever it may be, happened years ago.
And that's a very interesting idea because, yes, most everything is set like 2015, 2016. And some people will say, yeah, I wrote a book in 2013 and it came true here in 2016, but you went ahead and kind of said, here it is kind of in the back, and now it's moving forward, but people didn't think about those things. Now, do they think about those things now? I mean, is it something that, because it's so big now in our political realm and what the candidates and everybody are talking about, which is, you know, be scared of the ISIS, be scared of all these things. How do you think about like that when you're writing? Because that's kind of what the media and everybody is telling everybody, and it's easy to get caught up in that writing game, to be able to, you know, that you're no longer writing for the story, you're just writing for the headline.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. You know, when I'm doing research and I'm building the story, I'm not necessarily looking for any one specific type of event. I try to find things that are going to be relevant to the story and help move it forward. But one of the neat fallouts lately, you know, and obviously the book comes out Tuesday, April 19th, so it's technically not released yet, but one of the neat things that makes this book relevant is there's three key subplots that have showed up in the news recently. To begin with, Cheryl Atkinson, formerly of CBS News, did a story about 6 months ago on her TV show Full Measure about the 28 redacted pages of the 9/11 Commission report. Now, there's portions of Veil of Deception that address that question, so it's really kind of up to the reader to determine why that might be relevant. Also, on I think it was about March 30th of this year, about a little less than 3 weeks ago, Fox News did a report on Saudi Arabians buying land in Southern California, and they're basically draining the aquifer underneath that land to grow the crops that it needs to send back to Saudi Arabia to feed livestock back there. So this is almost directly one of the subplots in Veil of Deception, although some things are slightly changed. But the point of this is there's so many things going on in this country and this world that most people don't pay attention to. And while it can seem like a totally inconsequential event, you know, the ultimate fallout of this event can be devastating. And that's what we see in Veil of Deception. And then finally, you know, the Department of Defense recently identified and arrested a naval aviator for treason for selling secrets to China. And, you know, while the details of this are fully revealed, you know, I'm not going to speculate on what exactly is going on, but, you know, the situation is very eerie in similarity to Veil of Deception. So the point is, you know, none of these things suddenly happen. All three of the things that I just mentioned have been going on for years, but for some reason now the American public's put it on the radar.
Ah, interesting. See, and some of those things do fly under the radar because you are so bombarded with, I guess, stories that, I don't know, to me, it's kind of like they're trying to make a story out of something that you don't need to make a story out of because there's really nothing there. Maybe it's just a slow news day. And some of these things get lost because I'd never heard that. So when you see these kinds of stories that maybe fly under the radar, Is that when your radar comes on and is like, hey, wait a second, that would be interesting, and let's start looking at that more?
Yeah, sometimes. You know, like I mentioned, some of it was just as I'm doing research on something, I'd find something interesting and kind of bring that into the story.
And let's talk a little bit about your background because, of course, you have a military background being – in the Air Force. Talk a little bit about that and how that was kind of, you know, that was kind of a basis, maybe like that was the ground floor of what led you into now writing books, you know, dealing with the Air Force and in military style.
Okay. You know, I first got the writing bug probably in the early 90s. And the funny thing is my initial thought was, you know, I wanted to write a book about pilot training and try to explain what it was like because it's such a unique environment that the average person doesn't know anything about. You know, and as I started kind of saying, all right, I want to write about this, write about that, I realized nobody's going to want to read this. But then I thought, well, what if I kind of wrap the thriller around it? And, you know, what if the protagonist was a student, which is not your normal protagonist for a military political type thriller? So, you know, I gradually started working this idea together. And, you know, of course, you know, my experience in pilot training in the military, all of that ties into my books. So it was kind of an interesting way of going about coming into the process.
Yeah. Is there anybody in the book that somebody that you know will recognize? Like, hey, wait a second, isn't that Joe? Did you write about Joe? You know what I mean? Somebody like that, or is everything kind of just totally made up?
I try to avoid that, you know, because sometimes people may not appreciate that. You know, I'll have some friends that maybe I'll tag a name on, you know, their last name in there, just kind of a shout out and thanks for that. But as far as the characters go, I try to, you know, make the characters either composites of several people or just a totally made up individual. But I never try to model any one specific character after any one specific individual, because that just might not turn out so well.
Now, is this going to be, you know, and again, I apologize, I thought this was a standalone. Is this going to be a continuing series, or do you have an idea of, you know, no, this is probably only going to be like 4 or 5 books, and then I would have told, you know, enough stories with Jason, you're going to move on? How do you kind of see the future?
No, I definitely see this as a continuing series. I'm well halfway through the first draft of the third book of Jason's Adventures. And, you know, like I talked about earlier, you know, I have ideas for 3 other books. Well, they're not all about Jason. You know, Jason may only have a small part in it. So it's kind of more about the world that Jason's living in and the other characters and some of the other people who, you know, readers expressed a lot of interest in, you know, in the first book, and, you know, some of the beta readers expressed interest in the second book. So, you know, it's kind of fleshing out that way. So, you know, it'll be a continuing series, and I'm pretty excited about it. I've got about 5 or 6 other ones stored up there in addition to the 3 previously mentioned.
But they're all going to be in the same kind of genre. This is the genre that you're going to be – this is your home. This is where you're going to stay, or do you think you might kind of jump outside, have maybe some military themes, but explore a little bit different, you know, as yourself and as an author?
I have an idea for another series that's kind of a, you know, futuristic dystopian type survival type series, but I haven't really spent a lot of time fleshing that out as I'm trying to concentrate on this series with Jason Conrad.
Yeah. So let's just get into Jason just a little bit here, since he is going to be a part of your life for quite some time. Give us the background of exactly who he is, maybe where he started, where he's coming from, just as a person, maybe not, you know, the things he does within the book, but his personality. Who is Jason? What will fans notice when they see him, the type of person that he is, you know, how would he react to certain situations, those kinds of things?
Okay, sure. Jason, you know, in the first book, he starts off, he's a 26-year-old going to pilot training, and he's recently divorced, so he's got some struggles there. You know, he's struggling while he's going through pilot training. He's one of these guys that things have always come easy to him, but he's finally found himself in a situation where he's having to work really hard, and he's not getting quite the results that he wants. So he has some struggles there as well. In the first book, he runs into a young lady that kind of distracts him from some of these problems that he has. You know, unfortunately, the ex-wife shows up and tries to create a little tension there in his life. So he's a guy that has problems that all of us kind of have. In one way or another, and he's just struggling to make it through the day. Pilots will probably recognize the guy as, you know, that guy in the mirror every morning when we get up and look at ourselves in the mirror. He's working hard. He's doing the best that he can, you know, in a highly technical environment, and he's, you know, he wants to serve his country and do the right thing. Unfortunately for Jason, he's got events that pop up in his life that are out of his control, that he can't always cope with in a manner that he would like to.
When you kind of see, and let's just kind of go off today's political rants that are going on between these poor candidates that we now have to choose from for president, and you hear them talk about the political society, and you hear them talk about the military and these things, and you're on the ground floor, and you kind of see how it actually works, because 95% of America might not, well, you know, maybe not 95%, but a lot of people who are going to vote are going to vote for what they hear, but maybe that's not the truth. What kind of gets your juices flowing? Like, God, I wish they would really just shut up about it because they don't understand.
Wow, I don't think I could get a lot of that in 25 minutes. But, you know, that's probably a topic for another day. I don't know if I should go there right now.
But now,
how about we stick to the book?
Okay, but the thing is, and it kind of brings to the book, the reason why I ask is because when people read, like, Surly Bonds and they read Veil of Deception, they're going to see things that are more truthful in how the military and how things work. Maybe not, you know, the overall, you know, who's doing what, but it's the day-to-day things. It's the things that you have to put in that, you know, he does just in certain day-to-day things, how operations kind of work, how his normal day goes. So those are the kinds of things that I don't think a lot of people truly understand what it's like when you're in the military and how you have to handle those just day-to-day mundane things, right?
Yeah, no, and you're exactly right. And the books do give insight into that. You know, the first book gives more insight, obviously, in the day-to-day life of the pilot training student. But the second book, you know, probably gives more insight into probably what you're referring to is some of the underlying corporate mentality that takes place, you know, from the four-star level down to the lowest-ranking airman level. And it's, you know, it's really kind of all the same, just with different impacts and different results. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and that's where you kind of have to be, you know, that's kind of where you are putting in the little extras, the little things that people, you know, are able to kind of see that's different from the overall kind of plot. And that's what leads to the realism of these military thrillers, because, of course, you know, yes, could somebody get a nuclear weapon and explode it? Yeah, that could happen. But it's more along how do you handle those day-to-day kind of situations?
Right.
That's, the, you know, and that's always the thing that I always find interesting about when I read those kinds of books. That's what I look more forward to than the overall, oh, are they going to stop, you know, nuclear disaster? You know, so I always look for those things because my father was in the military. You know, he was a navigator in the Air Force. So I saw some of that, and I kind of saw the other side too, and I didn't. And so I always find that fascinating because it's very interesting to see how you have to interact in a different way and the family style because, you know, you're gone a lot. Or those types of things. It's a very emotional situation, and that's what you kind of have to try to capture also.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and, you know, you kind of touched on the drama that takes place with different aspects of the, you know, weapons and nuclear holocaust or whatever it is we're worried about. You know, the interesting thing about this book is the antagonists in this story, they come across as real people with real problems. You know, there's the brains behind the bad guys and then the muscle behind the bad guys. In this particular story, the brains behind the bad guys, a guy named David Ming, he's the CEO of Trincor Industries, the company that won the no-bid contract to develop this sixth-generation fighter jet. You know, he's a businessman, yet in this story, we see how he's manipulated by both his government, China, while at the same time he's manipulating the U.S. government. You know, he's a married guy. He's loving and faithful to his wife, but he's also a cold and calculating guy. And his main objective is to make money to send back home to China. You know, and then we have the other antagonist that's the muscle. And by muscle, I mean it's the guy who has the most interaction with our protagonist, Jason. And this guy is a retired General Jeremiah Wellington. And Wellington's hired by David Ming to be the project manager for this secret fighter jet. You know, and he has all of the connections on in the Pentagon and on Capitol Hill and deep roots in the Air Force test pilot community. And he's well thought of by almost everyone. He's a charmer, a tall, good-looking, well-dressed, well-respected guy, but underneath he's a selfish, calculating, greedy, and self-centered jerk. So, you know, it's kind of addressing those exact things that you were just talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, Michael, we got about 30 seconds left here, so I want to be able to kind of give you the last word to kind of let everybody know where they can find out about you, your website, you know, social media, all that fun stuff. So I'll leave it up to you. Do it up.
All right, that's great. Thanks a lot. The Partners in Crime blog tour starts tomorrow, and it runs for over a month. Gina at Partners in Crime has been absolutely fantastic, so I'm very excited about the book launch. Veil of Deception goes on sale Tuesday, April 19th at all the standard online retailers, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Books & Millions, iBooks, Snoke, Kobo, Smashwords, and more. So check out my website, www.michaelbyerslewis.com. It has links to all my social media, and hey, like me on Facebook at facebook.com/MBL author.
Well, again, Michael, congratulations. We are happy that we're the first kind of here to kick off your blog tour, and so it's exciting. So good luck with it. Have a ball, and thanks so much for coming on, and enjoy.
Thanks, John. I really enjoyed being here. Have a good day.
All right. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
See ya.
So, again, everybody, that is author Michael Byers-Lewis. The book is Veil of Deception. Make sure you check out his website at michaelbyerslewis.com. That's B-Y-A-R-S in the middle, lewis.com, for more information on Veil of Deception. It is book two in his series. The first one was Surly Bond, so you can check them both out. They're both available now. If you check out Partner, if you're an author and you want to be able to be on this show and do a blog, go on to partnersincrimetours.net, see what they can offer, see if it's right for you, if it's something that you want to do. I mean, it's a great way to kind of find new fans and get your book out there and be talking to me, or you don't have to. I mean, if that's not, you know, if you don't like me. Other than that, though, we want to thank everybody for joining us, and it's been great to be able to have both of the authors on today. If you have any questions, you can always email us here at radio@suspensemagazine.com. And, of course, you can always subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and get it right into your listening device. So until next time, everybody, we want to say thanks so much. Tune in tomorrow, April the 18th, so whenever you're listening to it. Beyond the Cover is going to be on with Jeff Ayers and I. And until then, keep reading. Have a good one, everybody. Bye-bye.